Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractors Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is entitled Developing Customer Cheerleaders and is presented by Steve Toburin. Steve is the founder and president of Concepts of Value, located in Durango, Colorado. Prior to starting Concepts of Value, Steve owned a service business for over 20 years. And when he sold it a few years ago, his annual sales volume per population was over 15 times the norm for his industry. The secret to Steve's business success has been his ability to train technicians in customer service. During today's tape, Steve will share some of his practical ideas for developing customer cheerleaders by defeating what he calls the four-headed dragon.
Welcome to Making the Cheerleader, a new vision for your service business. My name is Steve Toburin. I'm the founder and owner of Concepts of Value, a customer service training firm. And I've spent over 20 years down in the trenches in the service industry as an owner, a manager, a technician, and now I work as a consultant and trainer, and I'm here to tell you, things are tough out there. Now, I know you're laughing hysterically, and you're gasping out through your tears at the same time as you think, you mean I paid good money for this program? Tell me something I don't know. Of course business is tough. That's the way it's supposed to be. You know, no pain, no gain. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Running a service business in this country is bruising, nasty, ugly work. But it's all I've ever known. I'm so beat up on, if somebody was nice to me, I might just break out in tears. You're not going to be nice to me, are you, Steve? Well, don't worry. It's a terrible thing to see a grown person cry, so I'm not going to get all mushy on you. But I will say, don't feel like the Lone Ranger. I work with thousands of small service businesses around the country in all different trades, and yet, guess what? Their problems are all surprisingly the same. All of us face what I call the four-horned dragon. Each one of these horns can destroy your business on its own. Together, all four of these horns can be devastating, unless you have the secret weapons that I'll share with you in this program. The first horn of the dragon may be the most obvious of a company's problems. It's competition. And the service industry has some of the most dog-eat-dog competition I've ever seen. Your competitors may be the most vicious, backstabbing, low-life operators found anywhere. And yet today in this program, you're going to learn proactive ways to deal with these competitors. What about the second horn of this dragon, your customers? Talk about a love-hate relationship here. We all know that without customers, we wouldn't even have a business. But sometimes can't they just drive us nuts? It's been said that the 90s are the decade of the consumer. You see, customers today are smarter, they're tougher, and they're more demanding than ever before in history. Now, here's our choice. We can accept this fact and build our business around serving what I call the discriminating client, or we can ignore the expectations of this new, tough customer and be impaled on the dragon's second horn, discriminating clients. Now, probably the third horn of the dragon gives us the greatest grief. And I'm guessing when I said greatest grief, you said, he's talking about my employees. Well, there's no question that the ethics of hard work and employee loyalty that we may have taken for granted in the past, well, to put it mildly, they've changed. In many cases, employee loyalty and hard work is non-existent among the new workers of today. So how can we as business owners and managers cope? I'll share some ideas with you in this program. And finally, the fourth horn of the dragon, it may be the most dangerous, And certainly it's the biggest and the most inescapable. The fourth horn of the dragon is the constantly increasing interference of government in small business today. Now, I don't want to get your hopes up here. Unlike the previous three horns we just discussed, I don't have any grand ideas at all on how to deal with what I call the poisoned alphabet soup. You know what I mean. EPA, OSHA, and the dreaded IRS, along with all the workers' compensation authorities, the unemployment boards, the list just goes on and on. And all these people that work for all these authorities get paid to make business tough for small business. So while this information on service engineering won't help you with the IRS, it will save a lot of the energy you've been wasting fighting the other three horns. And if you get some ideas on dealing with OSHA or the IRS, just let me know, and then I'll be happy to invest in your training courses. Now, for a minute, just think about this four-horned dragon that we fight every day. Unscrupulous competition, difficult customers, apathetic employees, and constant government interference. I'm getting depressed just thinking about it. Talk about tough. No wonder for many small service business owners, these four horns of the dragon make life a series of constant crises. These poor people are lurching from one problem to the next, and every morning they wake up with the sour taste of dread filling their body. That doesn't sound like much of a life, does it? And yet the sad thing is that for many of these battered service business owners and managers, this type of existence has become normal. You see, they have lived so long with this management by crisis lifestyle, they've forgotten that business doesn't have to be this way. Being in business today should be fun. It should be exciting. It should be rewarding. I can't think of anything more fulfilling than being part of a team of quality people working toward a common goal. And while they're doing it, they're having fun. Now, what did I just describe? Well, I described business the way it's supposed to be. And this course will share with you highlights of a set of management principles that will give you a new vision on how to run your service business. I call it service engineering. Let's start out by analyzing your assets, the things you've built up over the years that add value to your service business. When you think about your business assets, what pops into your mind first? That shiny new truck you just bought? Or all the tools and equipment that you use to produce your service? Or maybe you're lovingly thinking right now about all the cash and the securities that your business has built up to tide you over a rough stretch. And of course, part of your business assets are your valued and well-trained employees. They're a wonderful business asset for you. But in this review of their business resources, most owners totally overlook their most valuable asset, their customers. In any service business, the customer base is very probably their most valuable possession, both in terms of the future success of the business, as well as in plain old dollars and cents value. Now, nobody is going to argue the fact that customers are valuable. But think about this. With any other valuable asset that we purchase, what do? We maintain it. We take care of it. And we protect it. So now, here's the $64 question I'd like to ask you as a business manager. How much time, how much energy do you spend caring for your most important asset, your customers? In other words, where do all of us stand on customer service? Now, it's true, being against customer service is sort of like hating mom or apple pie. But remember that Mark Twain once said, "Everybody talks about the weather, but nobody ever does anything about it." Well, see, the same thing can be really true with customer service. Everyone gives lip service to the customer, but very few businesses go any further than just talk. The song says, You don't know what you've got till it's gone. Now, let's not be that way with our customers. Do we realize the tremendous part customers play in our success? To help in this, let's fine-tune our vision and expand our customer vocabulary. A customer may use our services just once. That's great, but is that our goal? To have a bunch of one-shot Harrys use us one time and then we never see them again? Depending on our line of work, we may almost lose money getting a new customer set up and working for them the first time. No, we need and want repeat business. And when that happens, your customer becomes your client. And see, that's wonderful. A client will use our services again and again, and they're much more profitable to us than a customer. But you know what? You've got even bigger fish to fry in the customer game than searching for clients. Because the creme de la creme of clients is what I call the cheerleader customer. You see, if your neighbor asks just a regular client who they would recommend, your client will probably recommend your company if they can remember who they used. In other words, a client will passively refer your services if they're asked by someone. But cheerleaders, oh, cheerleaders, boy, oh, boy, cheerleaders will go out of their way to sell your services to others. Cheerleaders are so happy, so delighted, so surprised by the customer service your company has delivered, they'll sing your praises from the rooftops. Cheerleaders function as unpaid salespeople for your company. And the fact that they're unpaid, that they're just selling your services out of sheer enthusiasm, well, that makes them incredibly effective and believable salespeople. Now, you've heard of word-of-mouth advertising, haven't you? Well, let me tell you, cheerleaders are turbocharged word-of-mouth advertising for your business. Now, of course, every good business already has cheerleaders, even if they don't know what to call them. Think about your operation. You have some customers who almost take pride in sending business your way. Now, you may not have thought about it before, but these people are your company's cheerleaders. But now, let me ask you a question. What would happen to your business if you doubled the number of your cheerleaders? What about if you quadrupled your cheerleaders? What would happen to your profits if instead of just making a few cheerleaders by chance, you instituted a program, a system to routinely develop cheerleaders out of everybody you work for? Just think of the power of a program like that. Now today, I'm going to give you an overview and some of the tools that you need to build a system that will help your employees to consistently create customer cheerleaders. And then if you need more information, or if you would like more in-depth, turnkey customer service programs that are designed to teach your employees how to make cheerleaders, just call us at Concepts of Value, and that toll-free number is 800-742-2130. Your first secret weapon to fight the four-horned dragon is this concept of cheerleader customers. Think it, breathe it, live it, become obsessed with this idea of constantly and consistently creating customer cheerleaders. So how do we make customer cheerleaders? Here's your second secret weapon. We make customer cheerleaders by dramatically exceeding their expectations. Now, you see, whatever service we offer, our customer has certain basic mental standards that need to be met by us for them to be just satisfied. Customer service experts call these basic mental standards baseline expectations. Many times these baseline expectations are subconscious. The customer isn't even aware they've set them up in their mind. Now, how do these baseline expectations work? The customer calls us. We do quality work. The work meets the customer's baseline expectations. They pay us. End of transaction. But now, let's put a different spin on this story and create a cheerleader. The customer calls us. We do quality work, but we also pay attention to the manner in which we do the work. The customer's baseline expectations have now been wildly exceeded. They pay us. At this point in a regular business deal, our transaction is complete. But here, the transaction continues indefinitely to our benefit. Because since we dramatically exceeded our customer's baseline expectations, they're now our cheerleader. And the beautiful thing here is that we did the same quality work either way. But by changing the manner in which we deliver our services to the customer, we created a cheerleader. And you think about it, after all, we have to spend the time and the effort to do the actual service either way. Properly done, cheerleaders come as a bonus with very little extra expense on our part. Let's see how this works in real life. Harriet Jones needs work done on her house. One day at work, she hears Ruth Wilson, the secretary down the hall, talking about a company that worked in her home.
This was just the neatest, most professional company I've ever used. When I called them, they were pleasant and professional. Then the estimator came out, and right on time. Every other company I got bids from just glanced at the problem, scribbled out a price, and told me to call them if I wanted them to do it. But this company, they asked questions. They really inspected the problem, acted like they cared, then suggested some alternate ways of taking care of it. They were a little more expensive, but you know, I got such a good feeling from them, I went for it.
Now, since Harriet has been worrying a great deal about who to call, this conversation beckons to her like an oasis in a parched desert. And she explains she's sorry to butt in, but she's facing the same situation. And she asks Ruth, was the work the company did any good?
Let me tell you, they sent two of the nicest guys to my home. They were prompt and courteous and clean-cut. Even the van was clean. I was impressed. Why, they even brought their own doormat and laid it down to wipe their feet on before coming into my home. Both of these guys were really careful. They worked hard. And then, before they left, they reviewed everything that they had done so I would know what to do. And you know what I thought was really nice? Just as they were leaving, one of them turned to me and said, Mrs. Wilson, we sure appreciate your business. Then he gave me his card and told me to ask for him personally if I had any questions. Let me give you his name and number, and be sure to tell him I told you to call.
Now let me ask you three questions. First, did you hear any mention here of the quality of work this company did? No, you didn't. And you know why? Because good work is just a baseline expectation. In today's business environment, just doing a good job gets you no points at all with the customer. The customer assumes you'll do good work. And the second question, which company do you think Harriet Jones will call? Very likely she may not even take bids. And when this company does the work, will Mrs. Jones be dragging out that old magnifying glass to check on everything? No way. You know why? Because she expects to be delighted based on Mrs. Wilson's cheerleader referral. So you see, cheerleaders create more cheerleaders. Now, as you mentally review what Mrs. Wilson told Harriet, think about what she based her value decision on. Just how did Mrs. Wilson decide whether this company did a good job or a bad job in her home? Was it based on the technical quality of the work, the equipment, or maybe the procedures that the technicians used? No way, not at all. Well, why not? Because Mrs. Wilson is a secretary. She's not a service technician. She can't tell whether she's getting a good job or not based on the actual work. She's just a babe in the woods when it comes to the work that's being performed in the home. But yet, subconsciously, Mrs. Wilson desperately wants to feel in control, to know that her home is being cared for. So how did she make her value decision? Well, think back now to her comments to Harriet.
Two of the nicest guys. Prompt, courteous, and clean-cut. They even brought their own doormat. They reviewed everything they'd done. You know what I thought was really nice? Just as they were leaving, one of them turned to me and said, "Mrs. Wilson, we sure appreciate your business."
Mrs. Wilson made her value decision on emotional factors. She's a perfect example of the principle that is your third weapon against that old four-horned dragon. Over 80% of how the customer decides whether a good job or a bad job was done in their home is based on their relationship with the person performing the service. Now, am I saying here that you can do a bad job, a slipshod thing, and then slide through by kissing up to the customer? Not at all. This 80% rule ideally coexists in perfect two-part harmony with the good work that your people already do. You see, when a technician service engineers the job, he gets the appreciation from the customer that his quality work has deserved all along. In study after study of the service industry, this 80% rule has been validated. That over 80% of how the customer makes the value decision is based on their relationship with the person doing the work. I can also tell you, in my 20 years of field research in customer service, the 80% rule, it was proved true every day. For example, in our company, we received thousands upon thousands of comment cards back from our customers. Happily for us, almost every one of them was highly complimentary. But what was really interesting to me was that less than 5% said anything about the actual work that we had performed. What did they talk about? Well, listen to these 7 different written comments we received.
They were professional, courteous, and polite as usual. Or, Charlie and Steve were very nice to explain things. And, how do you always manage to hire such nice young men? Or, the crew was friendly and attentive to my requests. How about, worked very hard by himself, was also very courteous. Or, your employee was very hardworking, courteous, and helpful. And finally, everyone worked hard and was very kind.
These 7 comments represented the average that we received. Now, did you hear anything at all, anything in any of these comments about our equipment or our tools or even the actual work we did? Now, sure, our company, probably like yours, it did a great job. But what blew people away, what made them cheerleader customers, was the relationship our employees developed with them. Now, my guess is that as a business owner or manager, you easily understand these customer cheerleader concepts. Now, maybe you've never used that term cheerleader before, but I'll bet you've always instinctively built a good relationship with your customers. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what makes you management caliber. But now, here's your managerial challenge. Remember the third horn of the dragon? That's right, our employees. Our employees are essential when it comes to customer service. In fact, I'll go so far to say that without the active involvement and support of your employees, your customer service vision will be doomed to failure. Why? Well, there's 2 reasons. Number 1, if you don't sell this vision to your staff, even the very best of them will resist you with apathy and inertia. Everybody resists change unless they clearly perceive it's in their best interest to change. And if your employees aren't sold on customer service, they will passively resist you. You'll get tired, then you'll get distracted, and pretty soon, it's just going to be business as usual. I call this passive employee resistance swimming in cold molasses. How far can you get swimming in cold molasses? But there's a second reason why it's so important to get your employees on board with your customer service vision. You'll recall that the 80% rule states that the customer makes their value decision based on their relationship with the person actually doing the work. The customer doesn't decide whether they got a good job or a bad job based on your scintillating personality. They don't make their decision based on your fancy ad campaign or your company's powerful equipment. And believe it or not, your customer doesn't directly become a cheerleader just because your prices are cheap either. You see, the fate of your company, whether this customer becomes a cheerleader or not, is squarely on the shoulders of your frontline employee. Now, that's a scary thought, isn't it? You see, that scraggly technician you hired the other day just because you were desperate for a warm body is responsible for potentially thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars of future referral work if he makes the cheerleader. Kind of gives you a queasy feeling, doesn't it? And if it does, I say great. It's just so easy to take the customer for granted. And when we take our customers for granted, the 200-year-old words of Patrick Henry come true in our business. It is natural for man to indulge in the illusions of hope. We are apt to shut our eyes against a painful truth. So are we running our businesses on the illusion of hope? You know what I mean. I hope the guys don't make any customers mad today. And if they do tick off a customer, I hope I don't hear about it. And if I do hear about it, I sure hope I don't have to actually talk to yet another unhappy client. Running our service business based on this high degree of hope results in us having another type of hope. Having to say things like this: I hope we have enough money in the account to cover payroll. Or, I sure hope the bank won't foreclose and shut us down today. In addition to mentioning the illusion of hope, Mr. Henry also said, we're apt to shut our eyes against a painful truth. And I guarantee you, when we hire competent, decent technicians, and I'm sure that's the only type any of us hire, and we send these technicians out on the front lines without any customer service training, we are truly shutting our eyes against a painful truth. If we don't give our employees the secret weapons of knowing how to build a relationship with the customer, if we don't give them the tools of a customer service system, we're dooming them to failure. And then we wonder why business isn't better, why we have so many callbacks, why we have ticked off customers, why our frontline employees get discouraged and quit. Why? Because we as managers aren't giving our employees the weapons and the tools to fight effectively on what I call the home front, the battle for the minds and the hearts of our customers. The concepts we've already talked about in this course are the first of your secret weapons to give your employees to help them help you fight the dragon. Like all great forces in history, these weapons are ideas. Let's review them through the eyes of an employee. Secret weapon number one, the concept of cheerleader customers and understanding how important they are in my job and my future. Secret weapon number two, understanding how a cheerleader is made. A cheerleader is made only when I dramatically exceed the customer's baseline expectations. Secret weapon number three, the customer decides whether we did a good job or not based on their relationship with me, the person doing the work in their home. You see, the companies and individuals, including technicians and employees, that are really successful with this idea of making cheerleader customers, they aren't in it just for the money. At the risk of sounding all mushy here, great service providers use service engineering because it's the right thing to do, because it makes their customers feel good. And when we make other people feel good, we feel good about ourselves and our job. So it's my contention that we all have a moral and an ethical duty to make cheerleaders in our business whenever possible. Now, maybe you're thinking, wait a minute. Now, just hold on. 1 minute you're talking about making money and fighting the four-headed dragon. And incidentally, Steve, I think my dragon sprouted a few more heads than yours. And now you're talking about ethics and morals. Well, which is it going to be, money or ethics? Well, the beautiful thing here is we don't have to make a choice. Service engineering allows us to make money and do the right thing also. Let me get up on my soapbox here for a moment and ask you a personal type of question. Have you ever made a bad buying decision? You know what I mean. Maybe you got fast-talked. Maybe you just plain did something stupid. But either way, waves of buyer's remorse washed over you. How'd you feel? Angry? Cheated? Betrayed by the business that sold you this dog of a product? Absolutely. But how'd you feel about yourself for making such a dumb buying decision? Stupid? Ashamed? Kind of sick? With an almost nauseated feeling deep down in the pit of your stomach? Well, see, your customer, they feel the same way if you don't service engineer the job. And since we've already decided that how a customer views the value of their service purchase from us, it's based on the relationship we forge with them, then it really is up to us how the customer winds up feeling about their purchase. And I would submit to you that if it is in our power to help someone avoid all the negative feelings of a bad buying decision, then we should do so. And if we can make a customer feel great about their transaction with us, if we can make their day a little brighter and incidentally turn them into a cheerleader customer, well, we have an ethical responsibility to do so. And believe it or not, your frontline employees will buy into this idea. Why? Well, because in the final analysis, when we make customer cheerleaders, we make friends. And none of us has enough friends. Now, I know it's one thing to give you these three simple secret weapons for success, and then get up on my soapbox, preach for a while, and then say to you, these service changes will be easy for you to put into your business. Well, that's not true. Introducing and sustaining change in any organization is never easy. And selling your employees on customer service changes, it's going to be very hard. Sharing the concepts that we've been talking about with your employees, that's a good first step. But they need more. They need a lot more. A good place to start is to ask yourself, do I make it easy for my staff to give great customer service? You see, an internal business, one that always looks inward, one that always looks at what's most convenient for their employees, well, they make it very hard for their people to give exceptional customer service. They hem their people in with lots of petty rules and quotas. And then when the employee does break through the roadblocks, management extends no recognition at all for great customer service. For example, have you ever worked for a boss like this? Bill, I received a letter here from a Mrs. Archibald Smith. She says that on your own you swept off her walk when you were done, and then you climbed up a tree and got her stranded cat down. Now, she put in a lot of this thank you stuff, but what I want to know is, did you run behind that day? Because if you're kissing up to these old ladies cut into the company's profits, I won't stand for it. And by the way, did you write down this free work you did for Mrs. Smith on company form T-33/A? Well, have you ever worked for somebody like that? How long did your enthusiasm for serving the customer last? As far as that goes, how long did you stay with that job period? So here's my first rule for getting your employees to buy in to customer service. Make it easy for your employees to give great service. In other words, pick your battles, especially with your frontline workers. Most employees don't juggle tons of different responsibilities well. That's great. That's fine. That's why you're the manager and they're not. But as the scripture says, don't strain at the gnat and swallow the camel. Pick your battles. Pick out what's really important. What's the number one priority, the number one battle for your employees? Now, if you've been with me this long, I hope you're saying, make the cheerleaders, Steve. When you get down to it, everything else is secondary in a service business. So always ask yourself, is this form T-33/A absolutely necessary? Does it contribute to either making cheerleaders or the smooth running of my business? And I think you'll be amazed at how often you'll say, well, how'd this procedure worm its way into the operation? This procedure doesn't do anything at all. You know how every few years you go out in your garage, you look around in amazement, and you say in kind of a surprised tone, where'd all this junk come from? And then you ruthlessly sort through all your possessions, and if something isn't essential, you stick it in the garage sale pile, or you haul it to the dump. Our businesses are the same way. They get cluttered up with trivial little rules, paperwork, forms, and procedures. All of these unnecessary things act as roadblocks for our employees. They divert them. They distract our people from their core mission, making cheerleader customers. So right now, sit back. Analyze your operation. Look at it through the eyes of your secondary group of customers, your employees. Are you making it easy for your staff to give great service? Or, over the years, have their jobs gotten gradually cluttered up with more and more time spent on unneeded bureaucratic-type work? If so, it may be time to haul some of those procedures to the dump, or at least shift them away from your frontline service providers and back to your office staff where they belong. My second rule for selling your staff on customer service is what I call bringing in the brass band. Zig Ziglar calls it being a Mr. Goodfinder. You see, too often we sneak around just waiting for our employees to make a mistake, and then we pounce like a cat with a mouse, and we nail them to the wall. Well, instead of this destructive, negative type of management, why not actively search for little customer service victories to commend your people on? Especially when it comes to customer service, the old rule, praise in public, reprove in private, is so true. Think about yourself. It feels pretty good when someone compliments you. In fact, it's addictive. So get your workers hooked on the positive addiction of praise and recognition. How do we do this? The first step is to set up systems to get customer feedback. Now, if you're not using customer comment cards, please, please start doing so right away. Make sure every customer gets a card. Give them to every job you do. And if you want your response to double, may I give you a little hint here? And incidentally, I can't imagine why you wouldn't want to get as many of these cards in as possible. Well, then make sure every customer comment card already has an actual stamp on it. The customer attaches real value to that stamp. That stamp tells them, hey, this company wants my feedback, and they don't want that stamp to go to waste. So they're more likely to mail that card in. Now, when these customer comments come flowing in, what are you going to do with them? Most companies, well, they're going to glance at them and then file them, or more likely, they're going to throw them away. But not you. You're going to bring out the marching brass bands. You're going to read these glowing comments at your company staff meetings. And I certainly hope you have regular company meetings. And when you have a customer service success story, single out your employee for praise in front of everybody at your meeting. Ask this employee what they did to turn Mr. Smith into a customer cheerleader. This concept of getting your employees actively involved in making cheerleaders, using this new service language, swapping ideas on making cheerleaders, and even kind of competing with one another, it's just essential to instituting customer service in your company. And then I suggest you implement one more customer service procedure. Start measuring your customer service results, both by individual employees and the company as a whole. Tom Peters says, what gets measured
gets done. Measure your company's service success. You'll be amazed at how quickly even your hardened, long-term, kind of cynical employees will respond to this approach. And if these employees stay stubbornly entrenched in their old ways, well, maybe you don't need them as much as you thought you did. So my first two rules for getting your employees to buy in to customer service, number one, make it easy. Get rid of any energy-draining, nitpicky procedures and paperwork that clutter up your frontline employees' lives. And number two, be a Mr. Goodfinder. Constantly look for service success from your workers, and then call in the brass bands. Always make your focus on making cheerleaders. Talk about it and measure it. And then your company, your employees will soon see that you're serious. Now the third rule, and this one is the biggie for making customer service part of your company's fabric, a vital part of your corporate culture, is to develop written service systems that allow any of your frontline employees to consistently make cheerleaders. When you do this, you'll have created a truly great business, an operation that can stand on its own, one that doesn't depend on great employees to keep rolling along. This operation won't even need you, the owner or the manager, to complete its core mission, making cheerleader customers. And that's the biggest compliment you can be paid as a manager, because when you've built a real business that can stand on its own two feet, you've truly created something of value. So on the reverse side of this cassette, I'm going to give you a step-by-step program on how to develop service systems in your business. These written outlines will consistently manage the relationship between your employees and your customers, and you'll be well on your way to building a truly great service business by making customer cheerleaders. On side one, we talked about the fight that all small business owners face, the constant struggle against that old four-horned dragon. We're always fighting against these horns of dog-eat-dog competition, difficult customers, apathetic employees, and constant government interference in small business. But then we learned about three mighty secret weapons to help us fight the dragon. 150 years ago, Victor Hugo stated, "Greater than the tread of mighty armies is an idea whose time has come." Mr. Hugo knew what he was talking about, because like all powerful forces in history, these secret weapons to fight the dragon are just ideas. Our first weapon, the concept of cheerleader customers. Cheerleaders are customers that are so delighted, so ecstatic, so surprised by the level of service they've received from your company, they will not only use your services over and over again, they'll go out of their way to sing your praises to the heavens to everyone they meet. Just imagine the power of this army of unpaid salespeople, customer cheerleaders, out recommending your company to everyone they know. Then the second secret weapon we discussed. We make cheerleaders by dramatically exceeding our customers' expectations. We learned that it isn't enough anymore to just do a good job. The customer expects a good job. A good job is one of the customer's baseline expectations. Doing quality work just gets us even in the customer's mind. In other words, we discovered that when it comes to making cheerleaders, the quality of our work isn't as important as the manner in which we deal with the customer. And this brought us to our third secret weapon. Over 80% of how the customer decides whether a good job or a bad job was done in their home is based on their relationship with the person performing the service. Now that's a scary thought if we've spent no resources, no energy at all on training our frontline employees on managing their relationship with the homeowner. I call this process service engineering. So how do we sell our employees on customer service engineering? Well, first, we explain what's in it for them. We show our frontline workers that if they make cheerleaders, they'll make more money, they'll have fewer callbacks, they'll feel better about themselves, and they'll have a lot more fun in their job and their career. Now, that sounds pretty good to me. And then we discuss three steps to get your employees on board. Step number one, get rid of the internal roadblocks. And you know what a service hero is. This is some employee of a large corporation that braved incredible odds. He fought fierce battles and still came through for the customer in a blinding flash of superb service. Now, I challenge you. Go back to that newspaper story and read between the lines. 9 times out of 10, you're going to see that the customer service enemies this great employee was fighting were the rules and the procedures that his own company had set up. As that cartoon strip Pogo used to say, we have met the enemy, and he is us. So take a hard look at your company through the eyes of your employees. Then haul all those petty rules and nitpicky paperwork to the dump. If it isn't absolutely necessary for production, and the procedure isn't needed to make cheerleaders, get rid of it and show your frontline employees you're really serious about customer service. Step number two to sell your employees on customer service, bring in those brass bands. Be a Mr. Goodfinder. Use positive reinforcement to motivate your employees. Set up systems to aggressively seek out feedback from your customers, and then don't tuck those service success stories away somewhere. Brag on your employees in front of the whole company. When it comes to customer service, you want your frontline workers to get the big head, to be proud of their job and their career. And then step number three. Well, that's the big one. Make it really easy for your employees to give great service. Our ultimate goal is to make it easier to play by the rules and give good service than it is to give bad service. How do we do this? We develop written service systems. Service systems take all these vague, sweet, noble customer service principles and they bring them down to earth. Service systems make it easy for our employees to consistently make cheerleaders. Now, the dictionary defines a system as an organized, established procedure. So a service system is an organized procedure that consistently provides good service and builds a relationship with the customer. A service system is a script, a written framework, an outline that guides and manages your employees' interaction with the customer. As we discussed on side one, over 80% of how your customer decides whether he got a good job or a bad job is based on his relationship with the person performing the service. And yet, how many service companies out there make any effort at all to guide and direct that relationship? My guess is almost none. Most businesses put their entire future on the shoulders of the people least prepared to handle it. They're frontline employees that have no concept at all of how to make customer cheerleaders. Now, another advantage of service systems is that they lessen the chance of us being held as emotional hostages by our employees. You know what I mean. You have a valuable and skilled employee, and that's great. That's what we all want. But what happens when you wake up every day and subconsciously the thought is lurking deep down in your mind? I sure hope old Joe doesn't quit. What would I do if Joe quits? Well, see, it's a really dangerous situation when you need the employee more than they need you. Why is that? Because you've become an emotional hostage. And even the very best and most ethical employee will wind up inevitably taking advantage of these weird emotional dynamics in your business. But if you have written service systems, when an employee quits, well, yeah, you're sad. We always hate to see him go. But you say, well, Joe, I'm sorry you feel that way. I hope you'll reconsider. But I know you have to do what you got to do. It's a good thing we set up those service systems so it's going to be easy for someone to step into your job. Now, do you see how much better this is than having to say, oh, please, Joe, don't leave. I need you. I mean, I've got a wife and 3 kids, Joe, and a mortgage, and my customers need you, the business needs you. What will we do without you? Please, Joe, please, please, please don't leave. Anything you want, Joe, you can have. Just don't quit on me. Well, obviously, this puts old Joe in the catbird seat, and it puts you right where you don't want to be, an emotional hostage. Written service systems allow you to have interchangeable employees. and to very easily bring new employees on board. When we service engineer our operation and we develop these written service scripts, well, we're sending a very subtle message to our employees. And we're saying, yes, we respect you, we admire you, and we appreciate you. But if needed, you can be replaced. And as that old saying goes, good fences make good neighbors. And frankly, it's not even in your employees' best interest to hold you emotionally hostage, and it's really bad for your business. A third reason to have written service systems, these routines that structure your employees' transactions with your customers, is that we all have down days. And when you had these bad hair days as a kid, your mother used to say, "You got up on the wrong side of the bed." And she probably sent you back to bed until you readjusted your attitude. Well, we all still have days like this. You know, you're not sick. You're just kind of grouchy and out of sorts. Now, depending upon our employees' emotional maturity, they might have learned to cope, at least partially, with a bad mood. But do you remember on side one, our discussion about the ethical obligation we have to give good service, the moral responsibility we have to develop a cheerleader customer? It's not your customer's fault your employee had a fight with her husband. Your customer shouldn't be made to suffer for it. Now, if you doubt me, next time you have a customer complain, try explaining the problem by saying, "Mr. Customer, you just don't understand. Susan had a fight with her husband just before she came to work, and so that's why she drove through your flower bed and ran over your dog." See how far that one gets you. So when our employees have a safe, structured routine to rely on, it helps them make cheerleaders, even when they don't feel so hot. And finally, a last reason to implement these scripts to guide service is that we all do better when we follow a routine, even if we feel on top of the world that day. Now, you've heard that expression, we're creatures of habit. Well, it's true. We have more energy, less stress, and a better mental outlook when we follow a routine. We feel in control of our job and our life. And don't kid yourself, your employees have developed their own routine that they follow in the customer's home. But the problem here is that even your very best employee's routine may be a service disaster, and you don't even know about it. Your workers may be accidentally walking all over your customer's emotions. And why? Because you as the boss haven't guided and controlled the most important transaction in your business. The stage play that occurs every day between your employees and your customers. I hope by now you're sold on this idea of spending at least as much time on managing the experience of the customer as you do planning how to get the job done. But you might have some doubts, maybe even some objections, and that's fine. Let me bring up the main concern I encounter on service systems when I teach service engineering seminars around the country. This is normally from a frontline employee, and who unfortunately is usually a lot bigger than I am. And as I explain that a service system is a written outline, a framework built around the viewpoint of the customer, a scowl sort of starts to creep across his face. And when I bring out that service systems help us to guide and control the employee customer relationship, he'll raise his hand, really steamed, and just blurts out, "That sounds like some darn stage play. I can't work to no script. I just gotta be me." And I always reply, "You're right. I'm guilty as charged, because a service system is a script. But properly done, a service system isn't going to hem you in. It's not going to make your day boring. Think about the star of a stage play. Now, nobody's going to say that that job is boring, but what does this star work with every day? A script. Now, why is that? Because it brings order to that stage play. Now, what would it be like if the star one day decided he was bored, and right in the middle of the play, he started making up his own lines? Well, it'd be an absolute disaster. Well, see, as a frontline technician, you are very much the star of this stage play that includes your company and your customer. But you still need to follow the basic script. However, within the outline of what needs to be covered, well, there's tremendous room for you to shine and have fun. So that's how I answer objections from frontline employees. And it's the same way I recommend you introduce service systems to your own people. Another way to sell service engineering to your frontline employees is that service systems really cut their stress. Nothing is more stressful and exhausting to an employee than feeling out of control in the customer's home, not knowing what to say or do next. But with service systems, instead of spending huge amounts of mental and emotional energy floundering around thinking, what do I say next, your workers can focus on the finer points of dealing with their client. It's just so comforting to have this mental checklist, a routine to follow to help them make the cheerleader. Service systems really have nothing to do with producing the work. Instead, they're focused on developing a good relationship between the frontline employee and the homeowner. In other words, we're dealing with emotions. And in fact, our service scripts or systems are built around the emotions of our customer. So as we start building a service system, the first thing we need to ask is, what emotions are we going to encounter when our frontline employee meets the customer for the first time? Well, let me answer that by emphasizing that countless scientific studies have proved that customers hate buying any service, and especially services like the ones that we in the residential sector offer. Think about yourself. Which do you enjoy more? Having your car tuned up or buying a new color TV? Is it more fun to choose a service to clean your home carpets or to go out and pick luxurious new carpeting for your house? Well, my point is obvious. The buying of manufactured goods is perceived as fun, a treat, a reward, something to look forward to. The buying of a service? It's a chore, a drag. It's something unpleasant and kind of frightening for the customer. Well, why the difference between goods and services? Well, there's many reasons, but the biggest is that customers have a much harder job deciding the quality of a service, and especially whether they got a good deal or not. For example, you buy a TV. It's easy to shop for. You read consumers' report, then you compare prices between different stores. You buy the TV and bring it home. It's a big event. You turn it on. Look at that picture. What are we going to watch first? Isn't this fun, kids? But now, how do you feel? What emotions do you encounter when you purchase a service? For example, what thoughts enter your mind when your car has just been tuned up? Does it run better? Does it run as good as it should? They charged me for new spark plugs. I wonder if they just cleaned up the old ones and stuck them back in. Did I get ripped off? So now, are you getting an idea, a sense of the confusion, the insecurity, even the dread that a customer feels when they buy a service? But now let's take this witch's brew of negative emotions and throw in yet another factor into this ugly cauldron. When you're shopping for goods or services in the retail environment, it's very easy to make an anonymous withdrawal. Now think about that term, an anonymous withdrawal. For example, you're walking through a shopping mall. You go into a little shop, but you know the vibes there, they just aren't right. Maybe you don't like the atmosphere, or you just don't like the way the salesperson approaches you. Whatever. So what do? You quietly leave. No hassle, no fuss, no big emotional investment in some big confrontation. You just quietly leave. You make an anonymous withdrawal. Now, what about when we work in our customers' homes? What happens if they get these same bad vibes or negative feelings from our employees? Can they withdraw anonymously? No way. Your customer feels trapped in their own home. So what's the number one emotion that your homeowner customer's feeling as they wait for your crew? Fear. I guarantee it, your customer's scared to death. They're scared to death because they feel vulnerable in their own home. And, of course, this fear brings with it a lot of related emotions, suspicion, distrust, uneasiness, sometimes even outright hostility toward our technicians. So what's this all have to do with service systems? It's simple. We build a service system around calming and soothing these negative customer emotions. And we do this in two ways. The first one we've already talked about. We exceed the customer's baseline expectations. And the second way to calm and soothe our customer is to understand that this fear and the worry that your client is feeling gives rise to a lot of questions in their mind. And the key word here is mind. Your customer, as he waits for your frontline employee, has many, many unspoken questions in his mind. Now, for example, have you ever had a customer verbally ask you, "Do you know what you're doing?" Or how about, "Are you going to case my home while you're working here and come back later and back up a U-Haul and steal everything I own?" Or has the lady of the house ever looked at you and blurted out, "Are your people going to wait until I'm out of the room and then dig through my drawers and play with my underwear and make fun of my frilly negligees?" My guess here is that nobody has ever verbally asked you these unspoken questions. And yet, I promise you, every customer your company serves has these questions or ones like them burning away in their mind. So, how do we calm our customers' fears? How do we answer these burning, unspoken questions? Well, listen carefully, because here is another powerful weapon in your fight against the four-horned dragon. We answer our customers' unspoken questions by providing unspoken answers. Well, what do I mean here, unspoken answers? Well, think about the silent questions we just discovered your customer is mentally asking. Would it do any good for you to say, "Mr. Customer, let me assure you, I know what I'm doing"? Or would it be helpful to say, "Mr. Jones, let me get one thing out of the way right up front. My employees will not be casing your house so they can come back later with a U-Haul and steal everything you own." And, of course, it would be extremely non-productive to answer Mrs. Jones' unspoken question this way: "Mrs. Jones, let me reassure you, my men most definitely will not wait for you to leave your room and dig through your underwear and make fun of your frilly nightgowns." Yeah, you're providing answers to your customers' unspoken questions, all right. And the answer you're giving with these sort of spoken answers is, "I'm a crazy person." And yet, our service systems must provide answers to these silent questions. Because, like it or not, the customer does get answers. They receive answers by how our employees look, how they walk and talk, by our workers' actions and their attitudes. Our only choice is whether we want to leave these answers to chance and hope, or do we want to engineer a service system to guide and control the silent answers our employees send. You remember the old saying, "Talk is cheap"? Well, that's a true saying. These silent, nonverbal answers are going to have the most believability in your customer's mind. Now, let's take these two secret weapons, dramatically exceeding our customers' expectations, and the second one of answering unspoken questions with unspoken answers, and let's get right to the nitty-gritty. Let's develop together a service system for your business for the most important 2 minutes of the job. And that's right, the first 2 minutes of a job is when the homeowner decides subconsciously whether they're going to be happy or not with the work your technician does. When it comes to working in our customers' homes, first impressions are lasting opinions. If our employees get off on the wrong foot, chances are they'll never catch up. But on the other hand, if right off the bat they send positive, reassuring answers to the customer's unspoken questions, they'll likely wind up making a cheerleader. Now, I'm going to warn you right up front that many of these points may seem obvious, too simple, almost childish. You're going to be tempted to say, "Everybody does these things." Well, it's a very dangerous thing to assume when we build a service system. Many of your frontline employees are totally different from your average homeowner customer. They're different ages. Their social background is different. They dress differently. And very likely, your employees and your customers don't even listen to the same music. In fact, I can just about guarantee it. So please, don't assume your workers automatically are relating well to your customers. So here is my six-step service system for the first 2 minutes of any residential job. Present it as if I'm talking to my employees. Now, every time I mention an important customer care action in this service system, you'll hear this tone. I suggest you stop the tape when you hear this tone and jot down the point we've just discussed. And when you're done, you'll have a nice outline to review with your employees. Step number one, be on time. If we're late, you're behind the eight ball before you even knock. And if you absolutely have to be late, and I don't mean here that the line's too long at McDonald's drive-thru, then call the office, and we'll call the customer. It's really frustrating and irritating for the customer to be pacing back and forth. They're worried about whether we forgot them. Are they going to show up? Well, think how you would feel if you were waiting for someone to come to your home. And then when you get to the house, please, get out of the truck right away. I guarantee you that your customer's at the window, looking through the curtains, and they're scoping you out. Now, if you guys drive up and park and then finish your cigarettes, tell a few jokes, and then leisurely get out of the truck and stretch, well, what silent message are you sending the customer? That's right. The customer's getting the message that we're a lazy, inefficient company. Now, you know that's not true. I know it's not true. But the customer doesn't. And that's one of the unspoken questions she's asking as she waits for you. Are these people efficient and hardworking? So get out of the truck right away. And also, check your appearance. Take off your sunglasses. Make sure your hands are clean. Tuck in your shirt. And don't cut across the lawn. Now again, remember your customer is probably watching you and forming an opinion about the quality of your work long before you ever walk up to her door. Step number two of our service system. When you get to the front door, stand back 3 feet before you knock. Be real careful here not to crowd the door. You've heard that expression, personal space. That just means that we all have this invisible zone around us that if a stranger gets inside it, we feel real uncomfortable. And customers need this personal space, especially when they're getting to know us. And also, if there's more than one of us at the door, have your coworkers step down and behind you one step. A customer doesn't need to open her door and see this whole mob of guys waiting to come in. Everybody on the doorstep needs to stand up straight and tall. Don't be all slouched over or leaning against the wall of the house. Our body language really does send a powerful message to the customer. Have your business card in your left hand. You've already reviewed the work order, so you'll have the customer's name clearly in mind. Step number three in our service system, we need to properly introduce ourselves. All business professionals start the transaction by introducing themselves. We need to do the same. So when the door opens, look the customer in the eye. Remember, this is why you took off your sunglasses in step number one. And then give the customer a big old smile, hand the customer your business card, and say, Mrs. Customer, I'm Bill Smith from A&B Services. I'm here to... And you briefly remind them why you're standing on their doorstep. Believe it or not, people forget why we're there. And we need to give them time to remember and get up to speed with us. Now, do you see how this service system fine-tunes our relationship with the customer? Now, as you introduce yourself, many customers will reach out to shake your hand. That's why you give them your card with your left hand, so if they wish, you can shake hands. And that's also why in step number one, you made sure your hands were clean. And always, give your first and last name when introducing yourself to the homeowner. It just sounds more professional. And speaking of names, we never call the customer by their first name unless they invite us to do so. And also, always introduce your coworkers and explain to the customer what they'll be doing in the home. Now, so far, what have we done? We've spent about 15 seconds on the customer's property. And I'd say we've made pretty good use of our time. We've gotten out of the truck promptly, we've checked our appearance, we've stood back 3 feet from the door, we've looked the customer in the eye, we've given him a big smile, we've handed him our card, and we've properly introduced ourselves. Now maybe you guys are thinking, that's no big deal, everybody does this stuff. Well, not so. I guarantee you that our competitors don't do a lot of these things. And that's why our competition is laying people off, and that's why we're expanding as a company, just because of training sessions like this one. So are you getting a picture of the great unspoken answers that we're sending our customer with this system? Do you see how getting off on the right foot will make it easier for you to make a cheerleader customer out of this person? But now it's time for our fourth step. Break through the ice. Remember how we talked about the main emotion your customer feels as they wait for you? That's right, fear. And right now in our service system, your customer is still scared to death. After all, she just met you. So take a minute for an icebreaker comment. And this search for common ground can be an appreciative remark about her yard, or maybe mentioning that you just worked for a neighbor, Mrs. Smith, two doors down the street. It can be anything at all, as long as you're sincere, truthful, and not too personal. So I don't want anybody out there saying, Mrs. Jones, you sure look pretty today. Now, let me share something that's always helped break the ice for me. I introduce myself to the customer's children, or even their pet. Now, I know you all think that's funny, the boss talking to a dog. Well, go ahead and laugh. You'll really think what I do next is funny, because if the dog or the kid wants to, I shake hands with them. Now, I can't tell you how many dogs over my career I have shaken hands with. And go ahead out there and laugh, but every time that I shook hands with some little kid, I put a smile in their parent's heart. I broke the ice, and I made a cheerleader. And I'll tell you something else. If I'm buddies with that customer's kid or their pet, it's going to be a lot harder for them to call up and complain about some work I did wrong. So now you've introduced yourself. You've broken the ice. A logical question now is, what's next? Well, that's the same question that your customer's thinking. We can't stand on their porch chit-chatting all day. So if we're not careful here, our script is going to hit an embarrassing pause. And after all, when you think about it, our customer, they don't know what to do next. Remember, service engineering focuses on the mental comfort of our customer. So we never want to make him or her feel awkward or unsure of what's the next step here. So in our step number 5, we ask for a tour. And all you've got to say is, Mrs. Jones, would you mind giving me a tour of the areas we'll be working on? And as we go, please show me any areas of special concern. Now, if you use this part of the script, I guarantee your customer is going to practically swoon away. Mentally, she's going to be thinking, could it be? Finally, a service technician that's interested in what I think. Somebody who wants to know what my concerns are. So already, you know what she's thinking? She's thinking, I just know he's going to do a great job. Now, step number 6, wipe your feet. You're saying, well, that's obvious. Well, yes, it is. But trust me, customers tell me all the time about competitors who track mud into their home. It really is easy to forget to wipe your feet. But as we service engineer this interaction, we're focusing on sending silent answers to the customer's unspoken questions. And I promise you, your customer is asking one burning unspoken question, will they be careful in my home? Now, can you think of a more effective way to silently answer this question than just obviously making very sure your shoes are clean? And if your shoes are really muddy and you need to go inside, slip your shoes off as you step inside. I do this all the time. And invariably, the homeowner is going to say, oh, you don't need to do that. But do you see the silent message, the positive moment of truth that I send when I take off my shoes? So there you have it, my 6-step service system to care for the customer emotions in the first 2 minutes. Step number 1, be on time. Get out of the truck promptly and check your appearance. Step number 2, stand back 3 feet from the door. Step number 3, properly introduce yourself and your co-workers. Step number 4, use an icebreaker comment. Step number 5, request a tour and ask the customer to show you any areas of special concern. Step number 6, be sure to wipe your feet. Remember the 2 goals that we had with this service system for the first 2 minutes? first to dramatically exceed the customer's expectations. Do you think we've done that? Well, think about your home. How would you feel if a service person treated you this way? My guess is you'd be very surprised. Your expectations would be dramatically exceeded. Our second goal was to calm and soothe the homeowner's negative emotions of fear and worry. How are we going to do this? By answering their unspoken questions with positive, confidence-building, unspoken answers. Our goal with this two-minute service system was to project what I call the four C's: calm, competent, caring, and in control. I think we did it. I hope you do too. Now, it's true, these six steps take time. We haven't even stepped through the customer's door yet, and we've actually wasted 2 whole minutes. Now, it would certainly be a lot more efficient to mutter, "Step out of the way, lady, we've got work to do," and shove the customer aside. Now, none of our employees would literally do this, at least I hope not. But every day across America, frontline employees emotionally shove the customer out of the way by failing to spend a few minutes with them at the start of the job. That old saying is so true, pay me now or pay me later. We can spend 2 minutes and a little mental energy building a positive professional relationship with the homeowner at the start of the job, or we can spend hours and hours later dealing with complaints and callbacks. It's that simple. It really is our choice. The service system we've just developed focuses on just the first 2 minutes of the job. But please, take this concept of managing the experience of your customer and run with it. Constantly try to look at your company procedures with customer eyeglasses on. Always ask yourself, how will the customer view this? Look at every part of your operation and give your employees the service engineering tools they need to make customer cheerleaders. Remember that the basic premise behind service engineering is to make a friend of your customer. So we don't want to engineer this employee-customer interaction so much that our people become robots. Consistent control, yes. But overpowering domination, absolutely not. So show your employees how to have fun with this service script. Teach them to lighten up, to find joy in their day, their work, and their customers. The purpose of service engineering, it's not to put your people in some sort of straitjacket, but instead, we need to give them a simple framework to build the job around. Now, of course, nothing is as simple as it seems. And service engineering would be easy if all of our customers would just follow the script. But when you think about it, my guess is the vast majority of your customers do follow the script. They fall into just a few categories, and they likely follow the same path through your company. They all have the same needs. Well, that's wonderful, because you're going to be able to develop a separate service system for each group. But then, what happens if a customer just won't play the game? He's a square peg in your round hole of a service system. Well, you can't script out every single thing that your employees are going to encounter. And when our service systems don't apply, our final secret weapon to fight the dragon is brought into play: a corporate culture of customer service. Now, the best definition I ever heard of corporate culture was when I asked an employee of a company one day what he thought it was. And he kind of looked puzzled for a minute, and then he slowly said, "Well, I guess it's just the way we do things around here." And you see, sooner or later, your staff will encounter a situation or a problem that you couldn't have scripted out in your wildest dreams. Well, what do they do? Well, I can't help here but be reminded of Nordstrom's famous one-sentence employee manual. And that one sentence says, "Use your own best judgment at all times." Now, how can Nordstrom's get away with letting their employees have so much freedom? Because Nordstrom's has a deep, abiding, almost mystic culture of obsessive service to the customer. Now, if you follow the principles in this cassette, you'll be able to say with confidence to your employees, "Use your own best judgment." Now, I won't kid you here. Service engineering your frontline employee-customer relationships is tough. It's going to require an incredible outlay of mental energy on your part to analyze and script and follow through on these transactions. And that's just the beginning. Because then you need to live this stuff. You need to exemplify your customer service commitment in your own behavior. And as you change to an organization obsessed with customer service, you're going to encounter apathy, resistance, even outright hostility from some of your employees. It's going to take constant preaching, pleading, and training on your part to gradually convert your company. It may be the toughest thing you've ever done. But if you persevere in this relentless quest for customer service perfection, the rewards to you, they'll be enormous. You'll gain a whole new arsenal of powerful weapons for your fight against that old four-horned dragon. And you'll also make more money, your employees will be happier, you'll find a new sense of pride in your business, and most importantly, you'll quit running your operation based on the illusion of hope. You will know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that your customers will become happy, delighted cheerleaders for your company.
We hope this edition of the Service Contractors Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. Along with this month's tape, you also received several other things. There's a short summary of the tape you just heard, a brief outline of the program for a quick review, and you will also find a customer response card enclosed. There's a place on the card for your comments on this tape, as well as space for suggestions you would like to make for topics on future tapes. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.